Have you fallen down the cottage industry rabbit hole yet? Well, if not, buckle up, Alice, and click on over to the description in the show notes and sign up. Then you can get ready for the most fun induction into the cult of all things yarn and fiber. This will include, but not limited to, free yarn, free ebooks, patterns, coupons, and much more. You don't want to miss out.
You are listening to Crime, Coffee, and Crafts, a podcast featuring two crafty besties who love true crime and a good cup of joe.
Hey, amateur sleuths. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Heidi.
Welcome back. Woo. We're here for part two of Neville Heath. Yes.
Before we get to that, we're doing it.
We're doing the missing.
Another missing person.
Yes.
Found this on namis.gov.
Do you want to tell us what that stands for?
It's literally a missing persons database. Like,
yeah.
Holy shit. And it's NAMUS.
Okay.
So go look it up.
Is it the national?
I think it's like just name us. Like they have no
NAMUS. NAMUS.
Yeah. Yeah, you can search parameters there, which is really cool. It's a huge database though, so y'all.
Well, for what we are reporting, it's good to have parameters like that. Yes. So we don't just get inundated with all the ones that are overrepresented.
But they do get represented.
More representation than the ones that we want to talk about.
Yes. So today's missing person. Okay, now this one, I'm trying to use the mouse for my computer on my iPad. It's not going to work. Yeah, this one's got a little bit of a story. A little bit. There we go. Okay. Mary Margaret Begay. She went missing August 1st, 1956. Y'all. So she was 19 years old when she went missing. She would be... Why is it? That's really funny. It says way older than she would be. Yeah, no, she would be 85 now. She was so young.
Yeah.
She was 5'2" to 5'5", like that range, I guess, 100 pounds to 120 pounds. She was Navajo.
Okay.
Or is Navajo. Maybe she's still out there, but likelihood is pretty low, unfortunately. She was last seen at Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona, is where she worked. So she was working at the Bright Angel Lodge in Grand Canyon National Park. And it was reported by a friend that she was last seen getting into a vehicle with two men. That was the last anybody
ever saw. That sounds ominous.
Yeah. She had black hair. Brown eyes. I mean, that's all we've got on that one. So if you do know anything, you can actually go on the namis.gov website and
please report any tips that you have, guys. If you have anything, even if it's something you think is small, it could be the lead.
Yeah. And one more time, it's namus.gov.
And the info will be in the show notes.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Is that what you got on there?
Ready.
I'm just going to talk about the coffee again real quick because everyone should go look at their stuff online. But yeah. Brown Dog Coffee Company, it's delicious, guys. And I got the Tanzanian Peaberry.
Or Tanzanian.
Tanzanian. Why do I keep...
I don't know.
Because I'm terrible at pronouncing things sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's fine. Oops.
I make lots of blunders on this show, apparently.
Apparently.
I'm going to make us a new merch that says words are hard.
Yeah. Words are fucking hard.
What is funny, though, is that, I mean, I am like word queen.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine.
So.
It's fine.
It's fine. So, Brown Dog Coffee Company.
Word.
It's local. It's delicious. Thank you. I plan to go there and get some more.
Word.
And so we left off where Mr. Neville was married in South Africa. He was in the military in the South African Air Force. And life was good. He even got caught with telling him the wrong name. And now we're back.
I mean, yeah, he sounds like a real piece.
Yeah, like, so if I had been Neville, I would have been content with the fact that I got away with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I would have continued on with my Air Force gig in South Africa, living with my wife and child. But no, not Mr. Neville Heath. He was so caught up with the Royal Air Force and the fact that he screwed up and was rejected again, he applied again to the Royal Air Force.
What is his deal?
Under a fake name.
Again?
Mm-hmm.
Thank God.
And was accepted.
Wow. So, guess their background checking machine was broken that day.
I don't think their background checking.
didn't even exist.
It was World War II. I think
they were just taking men. They didn't give a shit who it was.
Yeah. So. He uprooted himself by himself.
Left his fucking wife.
He left without his wife and child, went to England, got in the Royal Air Force again under this fake name. He was considered a hero. And everyone in England loved him for his service. He had some big old war fights in his plane and he got commendations. He saved a bunch of people. But he was a heavy drunk.
Also, war changes a man.
Yeah.
Not for the better.
Usually not.
Yeah.
So he continued to heavily drink. And because of his drinking, he was again dismissed from the Royal Air Force.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, where was this man to go?
America. We'll take him.
I would have. But no. Instead, he, with his head down and tail between his legs, went back to South Africa.
Okay.
He went to go see his wife and child. But lo and behold, she filed for divorce.
Good, Donna. Yes.
Near the end of 1945, the divorce was final, and he was deported from South Africa back to England because he was being a thief again and had fraudulent criminal behavior.
Sounds about right.
Yep. He was court-martialed for the third time.
Oh, geez.
I think the military...
When you've been court-martialed more than once.
It's bad when you, like, come on.
I mean, it's bad when you get it one time, but it's real bad when it's more than one.
With the ability to be three times.
Yeah.
And three different military.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So I think the military finally said no more service for Neville Heath. No more service, sir. You cannot be a part of any of our military ever again.
Yeah, but what if he uses yet another name?
I think maybe he even got tired of that.
It's a lot of work remembering who you are.
I know, right? So he returned to Wimbledon, England, which is where his doting parents lived, and he stayed with them.
Should have just stuck to that lifestyle, buddy.
I mean, there were lots of choices he made that really just solidified his demise, you know? It just, because at this point, like, you can't do what you set out to do. You wanted to be this great military hero pilot, but you couldn't keep down your issues. Like, you just were an alcoholic. You're stealing and lying, and it just, I don't think those behaviors ever really get you the life you're looking for.
Right.
Because you're either just trying to keep up the life and you're continuously doing that stuff, or you die.
Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah. So while living with his parents for a couple months, Neville's drinking got increasingly worse. His behavior was that of someone not caring how his life was going anymore. So at 29, he lost everyone except his parents. His parents were...
He's so young. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he was 29. He lost his career, his wife, his child, and maybe even his will to live.
Yeah.
You keep making all those choices. Where else are you going to go? In February 1946, with the drinking and everything, Neville decided to go to bars and charm women. And on this particular night, he charmed a woman named Pauline Breeze. Mute.
Yeah. Oh man.
Excuse me.
You're a sneezy mess today, aren't you?
I know. It's the cold. It always makes me tingly. So it makes me sneeze. She was very excited, this Pauline Breeze. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably saying her last name wrong. I apologize. She was very excited to have met a very handsome army pilot.
Right. Okay.
Because he created this persona of who he was, of course. Man. And he made Pauline feel comfortable and safe. So she went with him to the Strand Palace Hotel in London. Their little hookup session started out normal. But soon Pauline found herself bound, gagged, and naked.
Oh, no.
With Neville over her. She screamed as best she could and the hotel staff actually heard her, came running, knocked down the door, and stopped Neville from whipping and beating her more.
Okay. Yeah. He needs to go.
But sadly, Pauline was extremely embarrassed. This was 1946. A woman met a man one night, is found the way she was found, and she was just glad to be out of that situation and have been rescued. But even though he was actually arrested, she would not press charges because of her embarrassment.
Okay.
So Neville was set free. Free to do more damage to others, sadly.
Fuck.
She was very lucky. But I wish that she had been strong enough to keep him behind bars.
It's so sad.
It really is. I mean, it's just, it's still happening all the time, every day.
Yeah.
You know? We have to get to a point where we're not embarrassed for what the situation we're put in and just know that it's not our fault, that something bad and terrible is about to happen. It's not our fault. It's that person chose to be a shitbag.
Right. Yeah, it's... Yeah. I forget who I was talking to recently. But reminding them that they didn't cause this.
Right.
The other person is doing this. You didn't cause them to be that way.
Mm-mm.
You can't make somebody be a way.
Right.
That's inside themselves.
Correct. And it is something that they have to work through. And
yeah.
You don't have to stand by and try and help them.
Yeah, it's that, what did I do to make this happen, brain? Like, you cannot do that.
No.
You didn't make it happen.
You didn't. It's you not didn't your fault.
Force him to do that to you. You didn't, you know, it's, yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. So, anyways, I'm glad that she made it out.
Okay. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. June 20th, 1946, a few months later, Neville went to a pub in Knightsbridge. Now, we're staying in England now. We're not gallivanting anywhere else. We're just in England. He met a friend. I'm surprised he had any friends at this time, but... he had a friend he was meeting at this pub.
Okay.
That night, he met a 32-year-old woman named Marjorie Gardner. Marjorie was a single mother and an artist who recently left her husband and was in the middle of a divorce. So Neville wooed Marjorie, charmed her, and they left the pub to go to a club nearby called Panama Club. It's apparently an elite and exclusive club. So he was, again, pretending to be a war hero, pilot, what have you.
Okay.
The pair was drunk and left the club after midnight to go to the Pembridge Court Hotel, which is located in Notting Hill. Neville woke sometime in the morning to find Marjorie dead, and he left the hotel.
He doesn't know how that happened?
Apparently not. Almost like Jeffrey Dahmer with the one that he beat in the hotel room.
I just don't remember. What happened?
I woke up and they were dead.
Yeah. It's like an episode of CSI.
Yeah. Later that morning, on June 21st, 1946, a cleaning lady knocked on the hotel room. Since there didn't appear to be a response, She went and used her master key. She opened the room to find the horror scene.
Okay.
The horror.
I can't even imagine being that person.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Especially with the way poor Marjorie was left. She was found lying naked on the bed. She was bound with marks and bruises all over her body.
Oh, God.
Her nipples were nearly bitten off.
Oh, my God.
Her boobs. And something had been left inserted inside her vagina.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So.
She was tortured.
She was brutally tortured.
Jesus.
And the cleaning lady did try and check for a pulse to see if she was still breathing, still alive.
Fucking brave.
Yeah.
Cleaning lady.
And sadly, Marjorie was definitely dead. The cleaning lady left the room and reported the death. And upon autopsy, they concluded that she had 17 lacerations to her naked body. The object had been shoved inside her and twisted forcibly.
Oh, my God.
These are not the actions of someone extremely drunk. These awful things were done by a sexual sadist murderer.
Yeah. That hurts.
Yeah. I know. I feel it in my...
Like, yeah.
In my... Wow. Boat, like, gives me willies.
Poor girl.
He did unspeakable things.
Yeah.
And the hardest part for me is just thinking what she must have been thinking or feel, you know.
The terror.
It's just a terrible, terrible, awful way to go. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as I said earlier, Neville left the hotel. He then took a train to Worthing in Sussex, England, to meet a fiance. Her name was Yvonne Simons. She was a 19-year-old, and he had only met her a week prior.
Okay. A week prior and fiance. Don't belong in the same paragraph.
No, they don't. But I guess he was very charming.
I mean, that comes with serial killer territory, though.
Right?
Charming. Ding, ding, ding. Avoid them like the plague, honey.
I prefer a little socially awkward. It suits me more. I feel safer.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. Please don't charm anything. Ew.
No, I'm not into it. Not into the charmers.
The geeks win in the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, took that train after his first horrific murder, went to meet this woman, who he'd only known for a week, 19 years old, clearly very impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
While visiting with her the next day, headlines for the newspaper, the front page, showed a story for the murder of Marjorie. And witnesses. So the police wanted to question Neville. It was like in the article,
mm-hmm.
like, have you seen this man? They wanted to question him because witnesses gave tips on who might have been last seen with Marjorie.
Okay.
So Neville wrote a letter. I don't know if it was a mailed letter or maybe telegram. But he sent it to the lead detective stating he had been with Marjorie, but had given his hotel key to her for the night and that she went with a man named quote unquote Jack.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. After that letter, he traveled on to a place called Bournemouth.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Bournemouth.
He also assumed a new name and he called himself Rupert Brooke.
Okay, Rupert.
Yeah, Rupert. It's very British.
Yeah.
He checked into the Tollard, hopefully I'm saying that right, Royal Hotel. And I guess he told his new fiance that, hey, I gotta check in somewhere and left her. And he went to this hotel. On July 3rd, 1946, Neville would meet a 21-year-old woman named Doreen Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And again, because of Neville's dashing good looks and charm, Doreen was smitten and agreed to have lunch with him.
Of course.
Lunch led to dinner at Neville's hotel. But as it neared midnight, the couple was seen walking to Doreen's hotel, which was the Norfolk Hotel. And sadly, Doreen was never seen alive again.
Motherfucker.
So the hotels had questioned Neville, who he was still using the name Rupert Brooke.
Right.
About his dinner guest. And he said it wasn't Doreen, who had now been reported missing. And some things transpired. And then a couple days later, on July 6th, he walked into the police station in Bournemouth to, quote unquote, clear up matters. But while there, an officer thought he looked an awful like the photo of Neville Heath.
Oh.
Because at this point, Scotland Yard, they were doing an investigation on Marjorie Gardner. And they had sent out a picture of a person of interest in the murder. So that officer was like, I do believe we have the person in question.
Damn.
So nearing 10 p.m. on the 6th, Neville finally admitted to them who he was. They arrested him and brought him to London on charges of the homicide of Marjorie. The officers in Bournemouth had quite a large hunch that Doreen probably had a similar fate at the hands of Neville.
Jeez.
So luckily at this point, he's in custody and
thankfully.
But the day after Neville's arrest, a woman was out walking her dog and she came across the body of Doreen. She had been left in the bushes. She was naked except for one shoe, and she had been beaten and cut up. And sadly, just like Marjorie, she also had an object inserted and left inside her.
Oof.
So these two murders are absolutely horrific. It makes me sick to my stomach to even understand what the poor women went through and felt during their deaths. They probably just went through so many emotions in a matter of minutes. And that is... awful roller coaster.
I just hope it was quick, but it doesn't seem like it was.
My question is, how was Doreen left like that in the middle, in the open? Like,
yeah.
I know she was in, but they were outside in public. Like, did he do all that out there and nobody heard anything?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It wasn't like in the hotel room, but maybe, I don't know. It's only wild speculation, but just seems odd that they could do that out in the open.
Right.
I will never understand how the majority of society doesn't understand why mostly women have complete and utter trust issues. To be safe in this world, we learn at a young age how we need to protect ourselves.
Which is really sad.
It's, I understand. Sure, not everyone is bad.
But a lot of people are.
Right. And how can we differentiate that? We have to build walls and barriers until we're shown that we are safe from harm. And even then, it's a 50-50 whether or not we make it out unscathed. I get that not all men are like this. I get that. But all women, all females, have felt some sort of torment or abuse at the hands of men.
Yes.
And I get it's not all men. I get that. But we don't know who it is until it's too late sometimes.
Right.
So if we are weird or it takes a long time for us to, you know, be vulnerable, especially in a intimate relationship, understand that it is because of how we are having to navigate this world.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's a crapshoot when really we all just need to do better collectively. Everyone needs to do better. And
teach your sons how to treat women properly. Teach your people how to treat women.
Yeah, just in, yeah, in that's general, what I mean. Like in general.
That is really important and it is not done. Too often we see it. And I, you know, with personal experience, have seen somebody who completed a murder suicide in 2020, who was very, very close to us.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing what I know about his childhood, knowing what I know about how he was taught to treat women, I'm not shocked at what happened. It fucking saddens me because she didn't deserve it.
No, she didn't.
Nobody deserves that.
Mm-mm.
But I know the parents. I know how they're dynamic. And I know he treated his mom the same way. So it really does start somewhere with a lot of these people.
Oh, it does.
So
It's taught.
Nurture is it's a thing.
Taught behavior a lot of times.
Yes.
And I just want.
Let's do our best to avoid that.
I'm raising three daughters. And I will tell you, one thing that has been really good about Haley's autism is that my girls, the younger ones too, they are learning that consent is not just from strangers, but it's at home too.
It is, yes.
We in my house ask if we can have a hug.
Right.
We don't just take hugs. No. We don't just hold on to our kids without their consent.
Well, and if they say let go, fucking let them go.
Let go. That's the biggest thing. Like we're taught that to show respect and to show love to others, we have to give hugs and we have to show affection.
Yeah.
But if we don't want that, we don't have to do that. It's our prerogative. Consent
is everything. And
my child taught me at a very early on as a parent that I can't just hug her.
No.
I'll get a fist to the face.
Yes. That's why it was so amazing when she hugged me. I was just like blown away.
Yeah.
Twice. And she hugged Ben. Like what? With, you know, we didn't ask. She just came and gave us a hug and it was so awesome. Right. So
that is like where it really starts. And just teaching people that it's okay to not hug or shake a hand or any of that. It's okay. we don't have to live in this day anymore where we have to constantly show affection. We don't. Right. If we don't want it, we don't want it.
Yep.
So ask. That's all it's about. Ask. It's
like, you know, go
give don't assume.
Go give Aunt Heidi and Uncle Ben a hug. You don't have to. I will straight up say, you don't have to hug me if you don't want to. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
It's your choice. Yeah,
exactly. So I know I went on a little rant, but fucking this episode really pulled that out because, you know, this
consent.
It's important. So anyways, back to our shitbag and his trial because he was arrested. Da-da-da-da-da. Oh, no. She's got no coffee. I'm running out, too. It's a sad day.
It's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. So his defense attorney was like, there's too much evidence. I'm never going to get you off with, you know, a not guilty verdict.
Right.
So because the murders were so crazy and so sadistic, he tried to get him a not guilty by reason of insanity verdict. But two doctors evaluated him and both said, yes, Mr. Neville Heath is a psychopath, but he's not insane and he knows right from wrong. And chose to do wrong.
Okay. That's a good thing, though.
Yeah, because I feel like back in that day, it could have totally gone.
Very easily gone the other way.
Yeah.
Because
they're like, oh, he's so well-to-do.
They would have thought back then that, like, there's no way somebody could, you know, not be crazy doing that.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
Wow.
So he was found guilty. Very quickly after the trial, the jury deliberated for an hour.
Oh, shit.
Neville was sentenced to death. And in 1946, that meant he was to be hanged.
If they do it right, it's quick.
Yeah.
But oftentimes it was not done properly and it was a slow, grueling thing.
Yes.
It sometimes didn't even work.
Right.
At all.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they'd have to cut them down and.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's the whole thing. Yeah. So it was not always very effective and it was usually pretty horrific. But in October on the 16th, 1946, Neville was executed in the Pentonville prison in London. And per custom, the prison governor offered Neville a glass of whiskey, which he replied, well, you're about it, sir. You might make that a double.
Damn.
That was his last words.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care.
Nope. But he wrote a final letter to his parents and is quoted in writing, my only regret at leaving the world is that I have been damned unworthy of you both.
Please don't tell me that he was doing all of this to appease his parents.
No, wow. I believe what he was saying is that his parents were good.
Okay.
And that he
gotcha.
Was... Now unworthy, he was, you know, unworthy right. to have them as parents because they both wanted him to do well and he just couldn't.
He fucked their name big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They probably lost friends over that one. I'm just thinking back to like that time period, you know.
Right, because everything changed like...
Even today,
it changes things.
Yeah.
Haley and I are watching a show, and it's very good. You should probably watch it, called Defending Jacob.
Okay.
And it's two parents. One is a DA, and their 14-year-old son, is accused of murdering another boy. But he is saying this whole time it's not him, and there is another person of interest. But like, you can see how now every like their mom, his mom, works for a corporation that helps children or something. I don't remember.
Oh gosh!
Though. So they fired her.
Yes, of course they did.
Because of what it could look like.
Yeah.
And sadly, I think in the end, we're probably going to find out that he is not.
Right.
The DA dad was taken off the murder case. He was originally the DA, but then his son was the suspect. And it just shows like,
yeah,
the dynamic of like what society is now labeled the parents as.
Right. Yeah.
All this other, you know,
they don't want to be associated with it.
Dynamic.
Yeah.
Right. Nobody wants anything to do with it. So it's just.
It's the classic. We don't want to get involved.
Right.
You know what? If you see somebody beating somebody else up, say you see a man beating a woman on, you know, in a parking lot or on the side of the road, are you going to get involved? Fuck yeah, I'm going to get involved. I'm sorry, but
get involved or be a good witness, but don't stand there.
Don't just like, stand there and videotape it. Call fucking 911.
Yes. If you don't want to get in the middle because of safety reasons, understandable. But if yes. you see something, say something.
Do
That's all we're asking.
Yes.
Call 911 immediately. Ugh. Don't just let bad things happen to good people.
Yes.
Or just anybody. Don't let it.
Don't look the other way.
Don't ignore. Don't ignore violence. It needs to be stopped.
Just, you know, call 911 and get somebody else to record it so there's evidence.
Oh, just yeah. Saying. It's always good to have video.
Video is good because evidence, but like make sure somebody's calling the authorities.
Please. Call 911.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah. It's not that hard. I can do it for my watch.
911.
I could be like, yo, not right now because my battery is almost dead. But
yeah. So, anyways.
Damn.
That is the golden-haired killer, a.k.a. the lady killer. But we have, like, so many lady killers. Like, why?
Yeah, the golden-haired killer
golden-haired sounds
so much more embarrassing. Better. So, I like it.
Mm-hmm. Murderpedia and Ministry of History.
Oh.
My resources.
Ministry of History sounds
yeah.
scary.
I know. But it was good. So, yeah. All I got.
We need more coffee. So, yeah. All right.
Until next time, ta-ta
for now. Thanks for listening to Crime, Coffee, and Crafts. If you love our podcast, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. This helps us more than you know. If you really love us and want to support us, go to our website at www.crimecoffeeandcrafts.com. From there, you can join our Patreon, shop our merch, and find us on social media.